Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican Lee Newcomb, Democrat Dan Johnson Weinberger, policy advisor Nick Zitzen, and author Carol Felsenthal. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base on State Street, that great street in Chicago where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to send us an email address, we'll give you that email address in the halfway point in our broadcast this evening. But thank you very much for joining us. It has been another terrific week for politics. We've got 51 days to go before the American people will select the next president of the United States. And this past week, it was a week dominated once again by Sarah Palin, not only her appearance on Saturday Night Live last night, but also three nights in a row, basically as the special guest of Charlie Gibson on ABC. Not only was it on the evening news, it was on Nightline, it was on 2020, it was all over. And again, the ratings were through the roof. And of course, one of the big questions was, how did she do? So let us begin with, first of all, our making his first appearance on our broadcast this evening. Let's ask Nick Zitzen. He is a government policy advisor, used to be an advisor to Governor Mitt Romney, hails from Massachusetts, as well as Tommy Thompson when he was the HHS secretary. Described yourself as a moderate Republican. You watched every word of the debate. What did you think? How did she do in her interview with Charlie Gibson?
Well, Bruce, I think that if you watch the roundtable discussion at the end of the interview that George Stephanopoulos hosted with Dee Dee Myers, a former Clinton press secretary, and Tory Clark, a former Republican spokesperson, the consensus, I think, was right, which is that if you liked Sarah Palin before you watched the interview, you probably found a lot to like in the interview. If you didn't like her, you were skeptical of her credentials, you probably found something not to like in the interview. Overall, I think she didn't make any huge gaffes. I thought that she gave some reasonably good, sort of down-to-earth answers that are exactly why people feel a connection to her. I think the people, again, who were skeptical of her before the interview will say, let's see how she does in the next three interviews, and I think that's the bar she's going to continue to
Carol Felsenthal, meet. One of the country's leading writers, author of the book Clinton in Exile. Nice to have you back with us, Carol.
Thanks.
Your reaction to the interview and the brouhaha surrounding it.
I thought that Charlie Gibson didn't come off looking too good in this interview. I thought he came off as patronizing and supercilious. And the question about the Bush doctrine, when that question was asked, I didn't know the answer, and I'm a political junkie. I mean, I think I might have guessed at the answer that Charlie Gibson was looking
for. George Will said today that answer has about three different answers to it, all of which are correct.
And Charles Krauthammer, I hope I pronounced that correctly, he had a very interesting column today on that same subject and also said there's a triple meaning to that. So while I think that what I loved that Sarah Palin did was she kept inserting Charlie into her responses, which I thought was very, I bet she had been coached to do that, and it took the edge off of her lack of experience and lack of knowledge in certain areas, I thought.
Lee Newcomb is our card-carrying conservative Republican tonight. Lee, first of all, welcome to the program. Nice
Thank
to have you
Bruce.
Back.
Thank
when
you.
When I heard that Sarah Palin had been selected, you were one of the first people I thought about, and I had to say that although you were from Mike Huckabee, you had to be cheering when that decision came down.
I'm thrilled about it. I think she's a terrific VP nominee.
So how did she do last week, and are all these knocks by the national media a boost?
Every one of them is a boost. Mm-hmm. I think that the ordinary people of this country who are sick and tired of politics and politicians see her as one of us, as just an ordinary person who has achieved some tremendous things in life for an ordinary mom from a small town.
Are you comfortable
and they're behind
having
her.
An ordinary person a heartbeat away from the presidency?
Yeah, I very much am. I think she's proven herself as a good executive. Do I wish she had 6 years of experience as governor? Of course I do. But history sometimes taps a person earlier. You know, President Teddy Roosevelt had been governor for 2 years when he was tapped to be vice president. It's happened with others. And certainly, I welcome the continual knocks on her experience because she is vastly more experienced than the Democratic nominee for president.
Dan Johnson Weinberger, your reaction, our card-carrying Democrat tonight, ordinary. She's an ordinary person. Is that good enough?
Sure. I mean, I think this is probably her peak. And I think the more people see what Governor Palin did as governor and the way that she ran her executive branch, and it's the same secrecy and bringing her incompetent friends into positions of high authority, just like George Bush, I think the more people learn about
which
the job
she
actually did.
Incompetent friends?
I think everybody in her high school yearbook. I was really pleased to learn more today in the New York Times, the first real report that I've been able to see about her job as an administrator, all her executive experience, and to learn that it was eerily similar to President Bush. And that there were all these incompetent folks that happened to grow up with her that were, you know, part of her friends that she put into the high positions in her administration. And this was, and the problem is, I think, is people say, yeah, she's ordinary. She's nice. I mean, I like her. I like Senator McCain. I think she's likable. But I think the job that she's likely to do, if in the unfortunate scenario that Senator McCain dies in office and she becomes the president, I think the job she's likely to do is going to be very similar to the job that President Bush has done.
Carol, by moving into our third week now, where Sarah Palin appears to be the focal point of American political discussion, is that a huge boost to the McCain campaign? It's almost as if people forgot what Barack Obama did in Colorado and that great speech he gave.
You know, it's a gigantic boost. But I agree that it may be not all downhill from here, but I do think that the McCain people must worry that they've peaked too soon. Now, the New York Times had 4,000 or some words today about how she has been appointing her pals to government positions, and also a rather detailed story about her husband, the first dude, Todd Palin, being in on meetings. Now, a few days ago, there was a story in the Washington Post about her charging per diem expense to the state when she was staying in her own home. But I think that those ordinary people that we were talking about before don't care so much about what the Washington Post and the New York Times say.
But is anybody in that category called ordinary people? Are any of them going to be stunned that she hired her friends and put them in positions of power, Nick?
Well, Bruce, I think the more important point here, when we're talking about Governor Palin's performance in Alaska, what do the people of Alaska say about her job? What are her approval ratings? They're certainly north of most governors across the country. Certainly the governor of Illinois is far behind Governor Palin, and he's governor of a much larger state. I don't know that anybody would make the case that he should be the vice presidential nominee because he's governor of a big state.
Well, she's about 80%.
80%.
Yeah. Of course, that's what happens when you give $1,200.
I thought it was also interesting.
that will help, especially when you go after the oil companies.
One of the programs I saw on her when she was first announced, one of the programs interviewed a newspaper reporter from there who was quite impressed with her and the way she'd run herself, not at all like the New York Times people that I'm sure you love, Dan, who flew in, talked to five people who don't like her and write an article on it. People of Alaska and the people there working in the Alaskan capital seem quite impressed with her.
By the way, I should mention that last night on CNN, and they are going to repeat it tonight, it's back-to-back documentaries on Sarah Palin and Joe Biden. I think it's at 8 o'clock Central Time tonight. If you didn't see it last night, I'm sure they're going to run it again and again. Very well done, very objective, and I think you learn a lot about each candidate that I think every voter would want to know. Again, I think an objective piece, not all fluff, but good stuff. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago with your calls.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. But there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go Red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go Red.
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
From Birmingham, Alabama to Anchorage, Alaska, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway on some of America's great radio stations and Sirius XM satellite radio every Sunday night. Anybody listening in the great state of Alaska wanting to call up and share your thoughts about Sarah Palin, give us a call. 1-800-723-8029. That's 1-800-723-8029. Let's go to Al, listening to us in Westmont, Illinois, on our flagship station, WLS. Go ahead, Al.
Hi, Bruce. I was uncomfortable with Sarah Palin, particularly on a few things, a couple things. One thing was on Russia, when they asked her about Georgia, about she was for bringing Georgia and Ukraine in NATO, and then when Charlie Gibson said, well, will that bring us to war, and then she was like, perhaps so. She was so cavalier about it. Since 2001, we kind of became paranoid about terrorism. Terrorism is not a national security threat. I mean, it might kill 100 innocent Americans here and there. That's not a threat to the whole nation. The only thing that's a threat to the nation is a Russian nuclear arsenal. And I didn't like the way she was so easygoing about, perhaps so. Maybe, after all, we have to fulfill our treaty obligations, don't we?
Okay. Al, you make a very good point, and we're gonna discuss that, because I think from a policy standpoint, and it isn't just because of that interview, I think it brings up a very good issue where the Democrats and Republicans clearly are on the opposite side, and that is, at this point in time, should the United States be aggressive in reaching out to the Ukraine and Georgia, suggesting that they should be in NATO, when that would be a real thumb in the eye to Putin and the leadership of Russia? Is that a good idea or bad idea? Because clearly you have a line between what Obama would do and what the McCain administration would do. Dan Johnson-Weinberger.
I think it's a fair question, and I'm not sure of the right answer, but I'll tell you what my concern is. My concern is that Governor Palin and certainly Senator McCain have this warmongering streak to them. And my concern is that they don't have sufficient fear of the downsides of provoking ever more war with ever more countries. And so whether it's a good idea that we should absolutely back Georgia and we should absolutely back Ukraine. I don't know what the right idea is, but my fear is with Senator McCain's long record of banging the drums to invade Iran and now Governor Palin seeming to dismiss the thought of any negative consequence to going to war in Russia, I think the warmongering party is somebody that ought to vacate the White House.
I want to stick to the question, at least for this next round.
That's almost...
Lee, is it a good idea for the United States to encourage the admission of the Ukraine and Georgia into NATO with the ramifications that might lead to?
Well, I think it's a good idea, but my opinion doesn't count. What we have here,
why is it a good idea?
Because we have had this over and over in history. When we do not stand up to an international bully, we are welcoming them to begin war. It's where Dan's answer is almost comical in that Sarah Palin, for having taken the exact same foreign policy position that Barack Obama, Joe Biden, and John McCain all three have, which is for the admission of Georgia, that makes them a warmonger. It is also interesting that this is being characterized.
That's not what I said, Leon. You know it.
That's also why the characterization of it as warmongering, which is sort of the way Charlie Gibson kind of tended to lead it. Well, does that mean we go to war? That's what signing on with NATO means. When you sign on as a member of NATO, it means if any member of NATO is attacked,
and
the others will all
the
consider it as
right.
an attack
she
on
got,
them.
She got
that's
that.
What they
right.
all. That's what all four national candidates agree with, Dan. All four of them.
Yeah, and my point, Lee, which you are intelligent enough to understand, is that Senator McCain is a warmonger. He's been beating the drums to invade Iran for years.
Well,
and being a part of that theme, the way that they address the question
NATO
of Georgia
here.
And Ukraine. Well, what is it? There's
Georgia
only one
Ukraine.
World, Lee.
We're
there's
talking Georgia
world.
And Ukraine.
So the point is, you need to consider.
Carol's response.
You need to consider
Let's
that
bring
as
the
well.
Others in. Carol, your response to that question.
Okay, we're sticking to the question of
yep.
Georgia and the Ukraine.
Correct.
I do not think that Sarah Palin's response was different from what I recall Joe Biden's response on that same question. I think what Sarah Palin was trying to do was just keep her lips moving. Mm-hmm. I don't think that in her heart of hearts she necessarily even believes that. She was coached. That's what she remembered. There were probably some trigger words, NATO, Georgia. I don't think it's something she had given any thought to, but she gave the party line, and you saw it particularly. I don't want to change subjects on you, but you saw it when the question of Israel was asked, and she four times repeated, "We don't want to second guess Israel." And what does she really think? I bet if she, I don't know if she really has ever thought about it.
Nick, is that a good line in the sand to have, that the United States should go out of its way to make sure that the Ukraine and Georgia are in NATO?
Generally speaking, I think so. I agree with Carol's point here. Governor Palin's answer was nothing new. It's the same position that others have taken. I think stylistically, to Al's point in his call, I think she's just a direct person. She's not somebody who clarifies with different levels of explanation every answer that she gives. The question is,
Joe Biden
is the king of that. Do you think that we should support a young democracy in standing up to Russia, and should we bring them into NATO? Yes, I do. Does that mean we should join a war? Maybe.
Now, Charlie, in one of his more pontificating elements, or points rather, he seemed to be somewhat startled when she made the comment about, crossing, into Afghanistan to get terrorists, which is exactly the same thing that Barack Obama said early in the primary, and he got in trouble for saying it by some. But a lot of conservatives were cheering him, and she basically took the same position, but he seemed somewhat startled by that response.
Well, because I don't, first of all, how much does Charlie Gibson know about the subtleties of these policies? I think he was prepped.
Well, he's an
his
anchor
script
man.
Was, yeah, but his script,
they know
his,
anchor man.
His script was written, and I think she surprised him by just the confidence that she showed. I think if you read the transcript of it, which I did, I didn't watch the whole thing, but I read the transcript. And I think when you do that, you realize there are so many holes in what Sarah Palin said. But to the people watching it on television, she looked like a cool customer who wasn't going to be bullied by him. And I thought he did bully her.
Let's take a call. Let's go to Eduardo in Chicago. You're on WLS and Coast to Coast.
Yeah, I think Ms. Palin needs to be a little bit more spontaneous, but are the Democrats going to keep to a new low and encourage Hillary to again push over Mr. Biden?
No,
because they might be nervous about losing.
That's not going to happen.
No, if Biden did something and got in a lot of trouble because of something that he did or something, he's got a powder keg sitting at his foot, and that's his son Hunter and his lobbying activities and work that Biden had done in the Senate to push legislation that helped his son and his lobbying clients. But that will probably not explode, but it would have to be something major. And then Joe Biden said one of the most extraordinary things this week when he said that perhaps Obama should have selected Hillary as his running mate. It was weird. And it's typically, Biden does say weird things sometimes, and this counts as well.
And also, I mean, everybody's looking into her record, but again, a 35-year voting record. I mean, we haven't heard too much about Joe Biden's voting record.
When you consider, Bruce, the reasons that were given for Obama's selection of Senator Biden, it was to try to make a more concerted effort to connect with everyday Americans who Joe Biden, native of Scranton, Pennsylvania, somewhat represents. I think Governor Palin, consistent with the game-changing nature of her candidacy, sort of steals that issue right out from under the Obama-Biden ticket and places the ability to relate with everyday Americans squarely with Senator McCain. So it's an interesting dynamic.
Dan, would you acknowledge that at this moment, you were on the show, you've been on the show a lot, but the last time you were on the show, there had not been a decision made, at least for McCain's running mate, and I don't think you've been on since Biden was selected. When you first heard that he had picked Sarah Palin, what was your immediate reaction, and what was your reaction 48 hours later?
So my first was, who? And then I had no idea. I'd never heard of her. Then I heard it was an Alaska governor, and I thought, well, maybe we're going to win Alaska, but now we're not. And then when I learned about her some more, I thought, that is...
What about her? When you learned about her?
Her?
What did the her do to you?
At first, I was sort of fascinated like everybody else. I think there's a reason why... I mean, it's so interesting. I mean, who is she? And how did somebody pick her?
She was out there.
Right? I think that's really fascinating. For the last 2 or 3 weeks, there's a reason why ratings have been so high and everybody's talking about her. Because it is. It's really interesting. Who does this woman that sort of came out of nowhere that is a heartbeat away from the presidency? So I think this is, I'm really interested too. I learned a lot about her administration
today. Did you say, wait a minute, the old dog came up with a new trick. Did that
you know what I thought? My first thought actually was sort of like that crazy old John McCain. He pulled out a crazy old John McCain. He's sort of like the crazy uncle in the corner. Like, you know, you like.
He stole the issue of change. He stole it. There should have been a police report filed. That's what he did.
Right.
He stole it. Your reaction. You said you were happy when you heard it.
When I first heard it that night, I was, who is she? I pulled it up on Drudge Report, and my instant reaction was, she's young. That's how much I knew about her. But within 24 hours, I knew enough about her. I was thrilled. And there was a lot of commentary by people who do know her, who I trust in the media, who were just effusive.
And there had to be a lot of commentary by people you don't like either.
In the beginning, you know, if Dan is as virulent against her as he is, then she's got to be good.
She
Nick,
cute.
Your response.
Cute.
As someone who lives inside the Beltway, who operates in that, you know, lobbyist government relations field, what was your reaction when you heard this reformer from the Northwest coming in?
First of all, I'm not sure if to take it a compliment that I operate in that sphere, but thanks for the mention.
But you're escaping.
Exactly. We'll try. Look, I think to your point, Bruce, there's two things that John McCain accomplished with the pick of Sarah Palin. The first is to try to neutralize or steal, as you put it, the change dimension here. The second is to neutralize the field as far as history-making candidacies go. I mean, for a long while in this race, if there was going to be history made in November, it was going to be because we elected the first African-American to the White House. Now, I think, one way or the other, you're going to make history this fall, and I think that was a smart move on his part.
1-800-723-8029. Back shortly from Chicago, I'm Bruce Dumont. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. From Modesto, California to New London, New Hampshire, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Our card-carrying liberal Democrat tonight is Dan Johnson Weinberger. He is an attorney. He is also a progressive lobbyist, primarily working the Illinois General Assembly in Springfield, Illinois. Lee Newcomb also joins us. He is the recorder of McLean County. That's in central Illinois, longtime Republican conservative activist. Carol Felsenthal joins us. She is one of the country's leading freelance writers who's written a new book called Exile, Clinton in Exile, A President Out of the White House. And also with us this evening is Nick Tzitzon, and he is a government policy advisor, having been an aide to Governor Mitt Romney from his native state of Massachusetts. And also he was an advisor, an aide to Tommy Thompson when he was the Secretary of HHS, and again, making his first appearance on Beyond the Beltway. Thank you all for being with us. Again, our if you want to email us a comment, our new email address is btb@museum.tv. BTB as in Beyond the Beltway, btb@museum.tv. Send us your email messages. We're always interested in how you feel about this broadcast. Let us go to a man who always tells us how he feels about this broadcast, an old friend, frequent listener, Bill in Scranton, Pennsylvania, the voice of the Keystone State. Bill, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Bruce.
Were you bowled over by Sarah Palin?
My first impression was that I liked her. I thought she was attractive. But let me give you a succinct assessment of Sarah Paladin, as I now call her.
Paladin, okay.
All right. First of all, she's a religious fundamentalist. That combined with her lack of foreign policy is an extremely dangerous combination, and she's disingenuous. I'll explain those points. I would also like to say that she's the female equivalent of George W. Bush as far as being really unqualified for office. When I talk
Does that mean, in your view, that she'll be elected twice?
That's what I'm afraid of. I really am. But when I say a religious fundamentalist, here's what I mean. I mean a person who sees the world in black and white in terms of good and evil, and there's no in between. This is a very dangerous mind and a very dangerous mindset for someone in that position of power.
Bill, take a breath. Lee Newcomb is here.
Yes, sir.
And he comes from a fundamentalist background himself. Your reaction to Bill in Scranton, Pennsylvania, Lee?
Well, Bill probably doesn't have any kind of a background religiously like I would or Sarah Palin would, which means that his judgment, I don't know why he would judge the way he does, because I don't think that's how she thinks. I know it's certainly not how I think. It's not how most, if you would call them fundamentalist Christians, would think. I think we see the world more as a broken place, and we were redeemed, and therefore we have a duty to give back and to work for the redemption of mankind through service.
You validated my point, Lee.
Really,
that
working to serve other people somehow says that I'm closed-minded?
Okay. My point, and you're validating it, is one learns with age to be very cautious with extremists. And people who have extreme ideas on any given subject, especially religious people.
What's the extreme idea?
The extreme idea is one is creationism. Two is they're against stem cells. Three,
creationism? Okay, we got to get to the.
I mean,
talk about the point. Lee, not
let
just
me,
keep.
Let me enlighten you.
How does believing in creation?
Bill, let okay. Lee ask you a question.
Bill,
okay,
you,
back to you.
When you bring up a point and I ask you about it, you know, it's polite to answer it because you're throwing things out, but then you're not giving us any reasons for what you're saying. You threw out that creationism makes a person extremist. What would the implication of believing in creation make a person extreme? How would that make me extreme?
Okay. First of all, it would make you extreme as a person who is extremely religious and, in my opinion, extremely ill-advised. And in my, I don't wish
okay,
to be
but what might I do about that?
Essentially stupid.
What might I do about that, Bill? When you say I'm not trustworthy and therefore she isn't and other people like us, what do you mean? What might I do because I believe in creationism?
It means that others should be very cautious of people.
But I didn't ask you that. What might I do that is so dangerous?
Bill, let me ask you, because I don't want to go into an elongated conversation, but let me get to the core point, because, you know, and regular listeners to the show know that you're You're left of center, and you're a real strong supporter of Joe Biden's. You've made that comment a couple of weeks ago. In fact, you were the first person I thought about when he was mentioned that Joe was from Scranton, Pennsylvania, because you've called this show for many, many years. What does it say about the American people that she, at the moment, is the most popular political figure in the country? That's one. Now, let me finish. What does it say about the American people that George Bush has been elected twice? And what does it say, generally speaking, about the difference between Republicans and Democrats when Democrats, every 4 years, part of their campaign usually is about talking about the intellect or lack of intellect of somebody on the Republican ticket? The yes. Democrats are always intellectually more superior than Republicans. Every 4 years, at some point in the campaign, that's part of the MO of the campaign. And yet, the American people tend to vote the other way. So what does it say about the country you live in that votes the way that's the opposite of the way you think? Who's out of the mainstream, Bill?
You've explained it, framed it exquisitely, Bruce, and I compliment you. As John Dean of Watergate fame said, in his life, in his political life, we knew that 20% of the electorate could be duped. Now we know a majority of the American people could be duped. This is a reflection, I believe, of marketing. The United States public has been marketed for over half a century. And as long as we could market and package a candidate properly, we saw this with George Bush, totally incompetent. We now, after 8 years, realize how well he was marketed and sold to the American people.
Well, I want to let Dan Johnson Weinberger respond to the same question.
I think it's not enough to say that somehow people are stupid or they made a mistake. A majority of the electorate voted for Bush. They did so knowingly and willingly. My question, and I guess it's a broad question, is this. How can it be, and I don't know the answer, how can it be that President Bush's approval ratings are somewhere in the neighborhood of 25% to 30%, and currently Senator McCain and Governor Palin, and it's exquisitely clear, they have almost identical policy positions. How can it be that if the president only has approval rating of 25, how can Senator McCain be polling at 49, 50?
Can I just answer that question?
Yeah.
And then I want to get Nick's response and everybody else's response. My answer to the question is that on some significant issues, the American people are smart enough to know, they are perceptive enough to know, that John McCain and George Bush are not on the same page on stem cells.
There are a few.
Big ones.
Not on the war.
There's a big one on the war because the American people and John McCain, and I think John McCain led the way. John McCain realized early on that the management of the war was all screwed up. And he was the one that spoke up against it at a time when speaking up against it could have meant his political suicide. So he did that. Mm-hmm. George Bush still fought him on it. He was the one that said, you got to get rid of Rumsfeld. A lot of Republicans said, no, you can't. You don't speak against, our Secretary of Defense during time of war. He walked the walk. And he's done that on enough issues, including campaign finance reform. He's done it on enough issues that a large number of the American people are comfortable that to say that John McCain and George Bush are a carbon copy of one another is absolutely it is laughable on its foundation.
But Bruce,
I want to let the other Nick respond.
Wouldn't you acknowledge that on the basic issue of how to run the economy, that they're virtually identical? They have the same tax policies. They have the same spending policies. That they're on the fundamental economic performance, they're the same.
That may be. I'll
thank you.
Agree to that. Nick, your answer to the same question.
Well, Bruce, I guess what I'd say to Dan's point is that if you were to ask, I think a safe majority of the American people, how they make a call when it comes to voting for president and vice president, they tend to do it on the basis of the qualities of the candidate, sort of a personal feeling they have about the individual. And clearly in this case, You know, Senator McCain has a tremendous biographical story to tell here. He's a war hero, bona fide credentials in that regard. As you've rightly talked about, he bucks the party, you know, countless times if he thinks it's the right thing to do. The one that sticks out in my mind is the compromise on President Bush's judicial nominations. I mean, that, and I think Lee might be able to speak to this, is something that infuriated conservatives. But without McCain's leadership on that issue, you're talking about the nuclear option being exercised in the Senate.
And he's not a popular guy within the Senate cloakroom because he's got a big mouth, he speaks his mind, and they're used to having a bunch of lambs.
Precisely. I mean, I think it's a solid judgment call that people make about individual candidates, and I think that they're responding to John McCain.
Carol.
Well, first of all, George W. Bush and John McCain, I believe, genuinely dislike each other. I think there is enormous enmity between them. Number one. Number two, what the Barack Obama people are trying to do now is to make McCain appear to be senile, suffering from some sort of premature dementia, needing Sarah Palin almost like a nursemaid to cart him around and keep him sharp. And you can see that happening, and it's a mistake for the Obama people to do that. You know, when Al Gore ran against George W. Bush and when John Kerry ran against George W. Bush, it was always, here is this brilliant Harvard graduate, the brilliant Yale graduate John Kerry, when their tests, their SATs were released and their transcripts were released, they were right about on an even keel. In fact, Bush was a little bit ahead. So I don't think that the American people don't like that. They feel not everybody went to an Ivy League school. This whole business with Sarah Palin having graduated from the University of Idaho, that's something they shouldn't get into because, in fact, Joe Biden's got a lot of academic stuff we talked about a few weeks ago on this program that he cannot be proud of. But the public education versus elite private institutions is part of it, too. So I think it's a mistake to go after McCain on those terms because he's plenty smart.
We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8029. We'll be back with your comments when we roll on from Chicago.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
We'll be right back. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, thanks very much for joining us tonight. We all know that you need 270 votes, electoral votes, to be the next president of the United States, according to RealClearPolitics.com, as they look at their map. At this moment, they have McCain leading with 227 votes in states they think are going to be comfortably for him, 207 comfortably for Obama. And some states, most notably with a total of 104 toss-ups, that is where they believe this race for president is going to be a won or lost. And as you look at those 104 electoral votes, you will find them in the states of Pennsylvania with 21, Virginia 13, and in Pennsylvania at this moment, Obama leads McCain 47.3 to McCain's 45.0. The next state is Virginia with 13 votes. Virginia has 46.7 for Obama, 49.3 for McCain. Ohio, another toss-up state, with 20 electoral votes. And in that race, you've got Obama with 45.6, McCain with 47.8. Minnesota, which is where the Republicans had their convention, is next, with 17 electoral votes. And in that race, Obama leads 49 to McCain's 44.3. Minnesota. Nevada, I believe, is next. Nevada with 5, Obama 44.6, McCain 45.6. New Mexico, 5 electoral votes. Obama leading there 47 to McCain's 44.7. That is usually the closest race in the country. Colorado, which is where the Democrats had their convention. In Colorado, there's 9 electoral votes, Obama leads there. And then in New Hampshire, there's only 4 votes. It's Obama 48 to McCain's 44.7. And, of course, New Hampshire is a state that's generally been very good to McCain. As you look at these races, because I know you look at these very closely in an electoral college way, what's your take on where these things are leaning right now? And are you somewhat surprised that, at least according to Real Clear Politics, there's a slight edge for McCain at the moment?
Well, I think what it means is that our hopes to penetrate more of the red base went away when Senator McCain gave the nod to a real base nominee. No pun intended, but somebody that really riled up the conservative
red
base.
Red meat for the red states.
That's right. So I think it moved McCain's base firmer into his camp. I suspect, but perhaps I hope, that what that will mean is that the independents in which the election will ultimately be decided, I suspect they may recoil a bit at the base selection of Senator McCain and instead lean towards Brock's way.
Nick, but as you look at those states that are currently up for grabs, when you look at those states, Nick, doesn't it make sense that if Sarah Palin has already caused some movement in some of the states that are now leaning McCain, that she is likely to do very well in those remaining states like Pennsylvania and Virginia and Ohio and Michigan and Minnesota? Certainly, it seems to me that culturally, she's going to work there just as she has worked there already in these other states.
I think that's a perfectly fair guess, Bruce. I mean, it's one of those, I catch 22s. I can see it both ways for the McCain campaign. Do you send Governor Palin out with Senator McCain on the campaign trail and take advantage of the clear excitement that she generates? Or do you ship her off by herself into those states where there's still a big question mark and put her in town halls and let her connect with voters who clearly respond to her? I mean, I think if she gets out even a little bit on her own and starts to make some excitement in those states, we'll see some movement continuing through the fall.
I don't know. I think I'd keep her right near the hip. I don't yeah. Only because I think the first story that's going to come out there once they separate is if there's any drop in those that come to see him, mm-hmm. it's going to be written as a weakness of the campaign. Carol?
The factor that we haven't touched on tonight, and I'm interested in you guys and how you interpret it, is the race factor. When Geraldine Ferraro was Mondale's VP, there was a lot of talk about can a woman with a woman's physical, not peculiarities, but with her, a woman's physical being, be second most powerful job. You don't hear that at all about men seem to like Sarah Palin, women seem to like Sarah Palin. So I don't think her being a female will make any dent in her popularity at all.
By the way, Barack Obama's
being an African American, that is the factor that nobody talks about much, but I really wonder about it.
People don't like to talk about it, but something else that people don't, at least on the Sunday morning shows, they were kind of talking over it today, when they were talking about that, although that there may be a split decision with the growth in female support for Sarah Palin, that she's getting a huge bump for the ticket. Mm-hmm. The hardcore Hillary people are not going to be going with her for philosophical reasons. But they then added that insofar as the blue-collar voters are concerned, it is the blue-collar male voters that are going towards her. Yeah. And they said it's because of the cultural issues, because she likes to hunt and fish, and she's the member of the NRA. Now, that's the politically correct inside-the-beltway analysis. I'm going to add another one from beyond the beltway. She is very attractive.
Right. She looks as good as Tina Fey.
The fact that she's very, very attractive is helping her with a lot of male voters. Have we underestimated that, Lee? I know we normally don't like to talk about cosmetics and lipstick, but the reality is
she's good looking.
She's the best looking vice president we've had in a long time.
She's smart, she's a good administrator, and she's hot. We like it.
Okay. Yeah, what's the license plate in Alaska?
Hottest governor,
coldest state, hottest governor.
That's right. On that note, we're going to pause. I want to thank our guests tonight, Dan Johnson Weinberger and Carol Felsenthal. Nick Zitzen has been with us, and Lee Newcomb has been with us. They'll be back for hour number two. In the next hour, if you're listening to us on radio, we're going to be joined by Thomas Frank. He's author of a new book called The Wrecking Crew, How Conservatives Rule. We're going to talk to him about what is likely to happen if Obama or McCain gets elected president of the United States. We'll take more of your calls at 1-800-723-8289. If you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
and take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go Red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go Red.
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
My name is Teresa. I was a good mother. Then I tried meth and quickly became addicted. I abandoned my little girl to chase my next high. 8 months later, my daughter begged me to come home. Her plea made me enter drug treatment. My recovery wasn't easy, but I've been clean for 4 years now.
Meth is a powerful drug that affects everyone. If you know someone who's using, get involved. Treatment is available and it works. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont. We continue with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway tonight, featuring commentary by Republican Lee Newcomb, Democrat Dan Johnson-Weinberger, policy advisor Nick Zitzen, and author Carol Felsenthal of the book Clinton in Exile. And we'll also be hearing from Thomas Frank, author of the book The Wrecking Crew, How Conservatives Rule. In this hour of our broadcast, 1-800-723-8289 is the phone number. Before we take some more calls left over from hour number one, I do want to spend a few moments talking about something that I said when I was offering analysis on Westwood One with our good friend Jim Bohannon, and that is, it seems to me that what John McCain really wants to do as he runs this campaign is that his hero is Teddy Roosevelt. He is really looking at, as Teddy Roosevelt is, as his motto. And again, in reaching out for an inexperienced, two-year governor who is an environmentalist with lots of kids, I mean, the similarities between Sarah Palin and Teddy Roosevelt are pretty significant. But again, let us remember also what happened with that selection. This inexperienced governor who went on to become president of the United States, and some would say one of the great presidents of the United States, got there because of the assassination of President McKinley. And we're certainly not suggesting that that's likely to happen. We don't want that to happen. But when one with apparently little experience moves into the White House, sometimes there is the ability to rise to the occasion. I would assume, Dan, I want to get your reaction to it, is,
yeah,
does Sarah Palin or does Joe Biden, let's put it on both mantle on each candidate, let's talk about the ability to rise to the occasion in times of crisis of those two individuals. Don't they both have the ability to do it?
Well, they're both smart, ambitious, driven people. I think the reason why there's some, I think I saw somebody say, to your point earlier about creationism, if she really believes the dinosaurs walked the earth 4,000 years ago, if she honestly believes that, she could have the nuclear codes. I think the reason why Governor Palin has a bit of a higher bar to clear than Senator Biden, and it's a little bit in politics to say, but Senator McCain's 73, he's had cancer twice, and the insurance people say he's got a 1 in 3 chance of not surviving his first term. So that's why I think it's fair to say that the burden that Governor Palin has to meet to say, I can really imagine entrusting the nuclear codes with you, is bigger than with Senator Biden.
The issue that you just referenced, because in the last half hour, you referenced, Carol, about that the race issue is out there. It's part of the body politics. Nobody wants to talk about it. Trying to factor that into these close polls, what does it really say? In these close polls, based on what we've been hearing and reading for the last several months, is that the other unspoken issue out there is age. The fear that a lot of people have about John McCain's age, whether or not he knows anything about the internet is one thing. Whether he survives is a much greater thing.
Right.
But let's talk about where age is coming into this discussion, even if it's subliminally.
Well, Joe Biden is 65. So you have Palin and Obama, who are young and vigorous and healthy looking. You have Biden, who had a brain aneurysm in the late 80s and survived that. But John McCain, you know, it's the older segment of the populace seems to be moving McCain's way. And I think there's some danger because there are so many people who fall into that category. Even the people who are at the older end of the baby boom generation can identify more with McCain and Biden age-wise than they do with Obama or Palin. Also, John McCain's melanomas, he's had more than two. I think he's had three or four of them.
Maybe right.
But they are surgically excised, and then he's given a clean bill of health. And, you know, he got them because he was for 5.5 years a prisoner of war, and they kept him outside, and he's a fair-skinned man, so he was exposed to all that sun. Also, you mentioned the keyboard, and there's something very interesting about that, which is the commercial that Obama put up, that this is a man of the past, he can't even send an email or you use a computer. Bill Clinton does, and I write about that a lot in my book. He doesn't even know how to turn one on and doesn't use email. But McCain in 2000, the New York Times did a rather lengthy piece about McCain interested in computers, interested in the digital revolution, but can't use a keyboard because of the injuries that his broken limbs and his broken fingers, which were never properly set, and then he got arthritis on top of that. So he cannot use a keyboard. So I think you do not want to go too much further with that commercial because it just points up his heroic status as a prisoner
right,
of war.
As he cannot comb his hair and he cannot tie his shoes.
Or throw a baseball.
Or yeah, well... But I think it is greater impact to
right.
show if the man cannot tie his shoes and cannot comb his hair,
right.
Because one, he can't lift his hands high enough to comb his hair, and two, his fingers won't be able to tie his shoelaces. He also cannot use a keyboard.
Is that a reason?
Disgusting. They went for that.
Nick, is it a reason though? And this is maybe impolite to talk about. But I mean, is he doing well in these polls? Because there is a sympathy vote. Is John McCain getting a sympathy vote?
I don't think so.
No. I certainly can't believe that would be true. If you think about the number of times that John McCain's been left for dead, I mean, sort of as a prisoner of war in the Hanoi Hilton and the GOP nomination fight last year, and now by Dan on the show, I mean, he's sort of...
I think I left him for dead.
Yeah, exactly. I think the real question, Bruce, comes back
I'm
down
to... I'm innocent of that.
What's the proper order of affairs here? I mean, do we want in this country a candidate for president with real deep experience on a whole range of complex national issues, and a candidate for vice president who maybe needs to sit on the bench for a couple of years and learn from the new president? Or do we want the reverse? Do we want a candidate for president who's largely untested with limited experience, and a candidate for vice president with all this experience? I mean, I think that's the question Americans have to face with in this election. And, you know, I think the movement towards McCain is sort of an answer.
Can't we understand, though, wouldn't the average voter assume that if Barack Obama got elected president of the United States, he would have someone that he could talk to all the time, his vice president, who can brief him, be his debating partner, if you will, on important matters that come before the country? And isn't that why you want to surround yourself with people who know more than you do? I mean, to me, a strength when as a leader, knowing your limitations, I think is the first thing a leader should know.
Right.
Obama made a choice. There was someone who knew more than he did. To me, that's a plus. That is not an admission of weakness. That is a plus. Whereas John McCain did not do that.
See, this is
John McCain chose someone who knew less than he did about a lot of issues, at least the issues that he says are important. Now, with one exception.
Energy.
When she gets talking about energy, she is more conversant than any other political leader that I've heard on the public on the public airways. And again, if she can make that case in the Biden vice presidential debate on the 2nd of October that energy is a national security issue, which I think most people now believe it is, then I think she will turn out to be a plus. But again, he did not pick the most qualified person to be a heartbeat away.
Clearly. And this is why I think the Governor Palin pick could have a lot of pop and a lot of excitement now when everyone's kind of fascinated by her, but fades over time, because I think it undercuts the central premise of Senator McCain's message, which is country first.
But what has happened is that the way that the national news media has covered the story and some Democrats, they have chosen to make it personal. And by making it personal, they have reached out to, again, the ordinary electorate out there who doesn't like the idea that she is being ganged up on because she is a woman or because she's from Alaska or because she's a fundamentalist. Back shortly from Chicago.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. But there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To go red for women and give your heart the love it deserves.
From St. Louis, Missouri to Abilene, Texas, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Joining us now is the author of a new book. He is Thomas Frank, and the new book is called The Wrecking Crew, How Conservatives Rule. And he is also a regular columnist for the Wall Street Journal. Joining us from the road, where he's out talking about his book, he's going to be in St. Louis tomorrow. And Mr. Frank, nice to have you with us this evening.
Hey, Bruce, I'm actually going to be in Chicago tomorrow.
Chicago, that's right. Are you in St. Louis tonight?
Iowa City.
Iowa City. Okay. So much for your schedule, but you're going to be in Chicago tomorrow. But you join us on the phone this evening. Give us in 100 words or less. Give us the premise of your book.
Okay, it's that people who don't believe that government can do, that government can work, when you put them in power, it turns out that they often do a really lousy job making government work.
To put this in context to what the American people are talking about and debating right now, You have Barack Obama, who's been going around for a year and a half talking about reform, talking about the need for change. Democratic primary voters liked it. He ends up getting the Democratic nomination. John McCain, who has a public perception of being a maverick, he survives the Republican primary. He reaches out to someone that he describes as a card-carrying reformer from the state of Alaska and, as I said a few moments ago on the show, basically steals the change, at least mantle, from Barack Obama, and they will certainly battle for that between now and November. As you look at those two decisions that the American people have got to make, which road, which leader are they going to give the power to?
Who they're going to. You're asking me who's going to win the election?
No. Which of those two, in your view, with your knowledge and based on the premise of your book, which of those two is most likely to go in and really tip
and really
things
clean it up?
And really clean it up?
McCain has the thing about Sarah Palin, we really don't know. I mean, she presents herself as a clean government type, but we know very, very little about her.
Right.
McCain has a track record of, when I moved to Washington 5 years ago, I thought McCain was the one Republican in Congress that I really admired. After all, he is the man who busted Jack Abramoff, and a large part of my book, is about the sort of escapades of Jack Abramoff. But ultimately, I think that it has to be Obama. It would be the one who gives you the best chance of actually, if what you're really interested in is someone running government effectively and government, doing the things that it was designed to do. I think it has to be Obama.
But you say that the track record of doing that in Washington is something that McCain has. And so I guess I would ask is, what is it in the background of Barack Obama, beyond the rhetoric, what are the specific track record that he has that would make you think that he would be the most likely one to shake things up?
Well, there's two things. First of all, Obama is, like McCain, is a reformer. In fact, the two were, I think they, now, I don't have all my material here in front of me, but I am pretty sure that they are both, or that Obama has at least talked about reforming the process of outsourcing and, contracting out government work, which is such a huge part of the story of corruption in Washington, D.C. But the other part of the picture is that the things that I describe are not, all the things that are going wrong in Washington, D.C., whether we're talking about the rise of lobbying, the sort of explosion in the lobbying industry, whether we're talking about the revolving door phenomenon, and we just saw a great example of that with the Department of the Interior scandal, or whether we're talking about contracting out public work to private companies, is that these things are all intricately associated with conservatism, with the political doctrine of, with the philosophy of government that we call conservatism. These are all ways of letting the market, for lack of a better word, letting the market control the state. And they were done either deliberately or, through indifference by conservative administrations, allowed them to happen, allowed them to grow, or actively promoted them in the case of contracting out, because these things are part of their core doctrine. So bringing in more conservatives, that's really not going to change these things. I mean, look at who's advising John McCain. Yes, he made it was great what he did with Jack Abramoff, and I applaud him, and so should everybody that's interested in clean government in America. But look at the number of lobbyists that are advising him. When we watched the Republican convention, I remember even during Sarah Palin's speech while she was denouncing the lobbyists in D.C., the camera cut away to Trent Lott, the former majority leader of the Senate, who's now one of the biggest lobbyists in town. There's Denny Hastert, the congressman from Illinois, who just recently signed up with a lobbying firm himself, and he's out there talking about how great Sarah Palin is, and her small town values and whatever. Dude's working for a lobby firm.
Nick Tzitzon is with us. He is a government policy advisor. He spent some time inside the Beltway. Nick, you've also had an opportunity to read Tom's book. Your comment to what has been said thus far?
Well, first of all, I'd say to Tom, congratulations. I think the book's extremely well researched and extremely well written. I sort of see it as a guilty habit of mine, in that I disagree with much of what you say, but I think you say it quite well. 2 points. One, there are examples of what you've articulated on the other side of the aisle as well. I mean, Jim Jordan, who for a short time was running Barack Obama's vice presidential search, really cashed out of his service in the Clinton administration to run, well, I forget what it was, Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae. And Trent Lott's lobbying partner is John Breaux, the former Democratic senator from Louisiana. I guess the question I'd ask you, Tom, you know, having spent some time in the federal bureaucracy, and it is vast and it is complex, and to some degree it's self-sustaining, do we really find that much fault with the notion that introducing some competition to the process, is that really for the worst? Does that really hurt the process?
Well, let me say two things. First of all, it is bipartisan. You're absolutely right. You mentioned John Breaux and the other guy whose name I forget.
Jim Johnson.
Yeah, and I would say who worked at Fannie Mae. I don't really know much about him, but certainly in the case of John Breaux, I would include him as part of the critique. There's plenty of Democrats that come in for punishment. In my book, I don't remember specifically whether I write about John Breaux or not, but I'm pretty sure that I do, because there's plenty of Democrats that agree with all of the things that I'm describing, and I'm against them too. Now about the bureaucrats and the
but you focus on conservatives.
Yeah, I would group a lot of Democrats in that under that category. Listen, we're living in a conservative age. You know, the New Deal era ended sometime in the 1970s, and we've been heading towards the sort of free market ideal ever since, more or less, under Democrats as well as under Republicans. Now, Republicans have pushed it along further than Democrats, but in some cases Democrats have done quite a bit of the work themselves. Bill Clinton, for example, that he accomplished a lot of things that Ronald Reagan was unable to do. He got NAFTA passed, for example. That would have been George Bush Sr., but something that he was unable to do. But yeah, there's plenty of now about the question of government bureaucrats and the contracting out of federal work. I'm not against it in theory. The problem is that it requires a lot of accountability, and accountability is precisely what we don't have. The Bush administration contracts out as a reflex. They do it, it's automatically considered good. In fact, they put out a report card every year on all the different federal agencies, and whether or not they've contracted out work is actually part of how they're graded, not whether or not it was necessary or anything.
When we have one of the things that McCain has talked about extensively is earmarking. He said, if anybody is going to push for this, I'm going to make them famous. He takes that pen out and he says, I'm going to veto it. The reality is, insofar as a track record of going after earmarks and really making earmarks, which are pet projects of individual members of Congress, it's part of bringing back bacon to their congressional districts or to their states, which most politicians try to do. The fact is that John McCain is sort of unique in going after those earmarks, is he not?
Yeah, I mean, he's in the sense that he's against them. I don't know if he's actually what he's actually done to stop the practice. I don't know if he's filibustered bills that are filled with earmarks or anything like that.
But if you were president of the United States, you would be in a significant position to do something about what you've talked about for the last 20 years.
Yeah, that is certainly true. I don't know what Obama has said about earmarks, but earmarks are pretty.
I'll tell you, Barack has been one of the first senators to release his earmarks, and as somebody that just went over the North Avenue Bridge, which was only there because of an earmark, I think it's sort of a red herring. I mean, the idea is who decides who's going to spend the money? Is it either going to be Congress who's going to lay it out in the bill in something called earmarks, or is it going to be the administration that figures it out in their discretion? And I think members of Congress would say, well, earmarks getting a bad rap because we're the ones that are elected, not some pesky bureaucrat, whether they're outsourced or not. And we're the ones that want to say very explicitly how the money's going to get spent and what projects we're going to spend the money on.
So the concept of earmarking is not a bad concept. Do you agree with that, Tom?
Well, it's in theory it has a certain appeal to it, but it also has a certain drawback, which is that it goes around the you know, it goes around, it circumvents expertise. So it's got, it, there's two sides to it. What I want to point out, though, is that earmarking as a historical fact, although it's been around for a long time, it really exploded with the Gingrich Congress. This isn't, this is something that is also, you know, historically associated with conservative rule. Now,
but
isn't the core
reason for earmarking is that a member of a party wants to get their piece of the bacon to bring it back home. And when the pendulum of power swings in Washington, whether it's left to right or right to left, the other side, the incoming side, wants to make up for being on the short end of the stick for the previous administration. Isn't that, in essence, what goes on?
I would say, well, first of all, there's a basic flaw in your thinking here, in that the two parties are precise mirror opposites of each other. It doesn't work that way.
Okay, we do have to pause. 1-800-723-8029. On the line tonight, Thomas Frank, author of the book, The Wrecking Crew, How Conservatives Rules, with your phone calls at 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont, from coast to coast and border to border, taking America's political pulse every Sunday night. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's From Sykeston, Missouri to Lincoln, Nebraska, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8029, around the table in Chicago. Our card-carrying Democrat tonight is Dan Johnson-Weinberger. He is a progressive lobbyist and a young Democrat. And also joining us this evening is Lee Newcomb. Lee Newcomb is the recorder of McLean County. That's in central Illinois. Also, policy advisor Nick Zitzen joins us. He has been working inside the Beltway, but soon in the process of moving on to greater pastures, greener pastures. And also Carol Felsenthal joins us. She is author of the book, Clinton in Exile, A President Out of the White House. And joining us on the phone is Thomas Frank, whose new book is called The Wrecking Crew, How Conservatives Rule. And our phone numbers, our phone lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. Let's go to calls and to take a call. Let's go to Carlos listening to us in Houston, Texas on KLBJ. I didn't think they were getting any calls out of Texas tonight.
Oh, we're okay, but, you know, everything's happening slowly out here, but it's okay. I got electricity, so I'm the lucky one.
Yes, well, nice to hear from you tonight.
Glad you're all right.
Well, I'm not sure what topic we're on now. We're going to talk about Sarah Palin.
We can talk about whatever you want, and we'll let Mr. Frank respond. Or if you have questions for Mr. Frank, we'll direct them to him.
All right. Basically, I want to say that it's no longer the McCain ticket; it's the Palin ticket. And I think people should realize and talk about it that we're voting for McCain because of Sarah Palin. It's not because of McCain's 30 years or 35 years. We're not looking at Biden because of his 35 years. We're looking at this wonderful lady that has more executive experience than even John McCain does, and we're looking at her as a reformer, as a person that can go in there and change Washington, D.C. into a conservative D.C., not this liberal D.C. that gets away with funding nonsense.
No, but wait a second. Tom, you stay on the line because Carlos, you think that it's the liberals that are screwing things up in D.C. Tom Frank
Absolutely.
Says that the conservatives are screwing it up.
Well, that's the myth, of course, is that it's a liberal town and that it remains liberal no matter what happens. But, you know, when I moved there, the conservatives controlled both houses of Congress as well as the presidency. They just lost Congress last year. So I had quite a bit of experience with the conservative D.C. and the various industries that dominate the city now. I mean, we're talking about, you know, the lobbying industry, which was the corporate lobbying industry here, K Street, was so close to the delay Congress, and the government contractors, which are very, you know, close to Republican administrations, especially the current one. It's not a liberal town. I mean, yeah, D.C. voted for John Kerry. The way it votes is in the District of Columbia proper and in some of the suburbs is Democratic, but in its essence, it is a conservative city. And the scandals and the misgovernment and the failures and the foolishness that I describe in the book, these are all the product of conservatives. They can't just avoid the blame by with this old myth about Washington being, you know, inherently liberal.
I think that's right. What I think is fascinating is that Senator McCain is trying to run away from his party and run away from any accountability to the party in power in the White House, clearly the Republicans.
Well, why wouldn't he?
Well,
I mean, you're a political guy.
I just can't believe he's getting away with it.
But you don't. Why in a campaign would you accentuate the negative?
I don't think he.
Well, you don't do that.
No, but I can't.
He's talking about He's trying to change the subject. He doesn't want to take credit for the things that George Bush screwed up.
Aren't you a little surprised that he gets away with it though? A little bit.
He wasn't. Well,
I'm surprised about. I'm surprised that Barack Obama, who is this great reformer,
yeah.
And again, we're all from we're from Illinois.
Yeah.
That no one ever asks him about who he has endorsed, who his mentor was, what real reforms was he responsible for? Why does he endorse some really less than stellar people when he had an opportunity to either make or break careers? I want to look at his record as a reformer. What did he do when he had the power to do things?
I'll give you a couple.
Did he enhance the career of Todd Strozier? By the way, we should mention for those listening around the country, this is a very controversial president of the Cook County Board, probably one of the most significant political elections that's taken place in the last 5 to 15 years in Illinois, a man who is not qualified for the job he has, and yet he's in that job because Barack Obama said he was going to be, he endorsed
the Democrat over the Republican.
And
he did not cross party lines, that's right.
And has he ever crossed party lines?
I thought this was supposed to be beyond the loop here.
My point, Dan was making a point about how McCain is getting away, how the national news media is not focusing on John McCain's background. I'm just saying is there's some significant things about Barack Obama's background that, frankly, national reporters are not asking. That's also part of the permanent record of Barack Obama. And by the way,
they certainly should be asking those things. But the main issue in this election, in my opinion, is not so much Obama himself as holding conservatism accountable for what it's been doing for the last 30 years in Washington, D.C. You got to remember, this is a movement that regards government with an incredible amount of cynicism. Remember President Reagan's famous laugh line, you know, that he would always repeat, like with the scariest sentence in the English language is, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help."
Right.
And you take a movement that believes things like that, you put it in charge of the state, you put it in charge of the government, and what does it do? It starts running these agencies in reverse. It starts putting industry lobbyists in charge of, you know, of the regulatory bodies that oversee those industries.
We all know, Tom, by the way, I will certainly acknowledge, we all know that government can screw up. They screwed up the management of the war. They've screwed up Walter Reed. They've screwed up Katrina. They screwed up FEMA. I mean, you know, chapter and verse. There's you're not going to ever hear me say that when conservatives or conservative believers and supporters in Washington have gone in and they're running a top-notch ship. They're not. But many conservatives are upset with that as well, including this huge deficit that is being run up.
That's right. Now, the deficit.
Tom, this is Lee Newcomb. I am probably one of the resident conservatives of this program over many years. Let me tell you something. I do not approve, and I do not believe most conservatives who really are political conservatives at all approve of what has happened in the Bush administration and in the Republican Congress. I believe the Republican Congress richly deserved to lose because we became Washington and we didn't govern as we said we did. I think it's the opposite of what you're contending, that when conservatives take over, they screw it up. I don't think they were conservative at all. They became big government. The Bush administration is a big government administration. And some of us agree with you that all of this private contracting and other things is not good public policy. So when you paint with a broad brush and say conservatives do this, I disagree with you because I don't think it's a lot of conservatism that is there right now.
All right. Well, I appreciate you agreeing with me about the facts of the case, but a lot of this stuff goes back to the Reagan administration. I mean, it was contracting out got its start with something called the Grace Commission, which was, you know, a bunch of business leaders got together and recommended
right.
This is an essential sort of doctrine of the conservative movement, the privatizing and the outsourcing. A lot of the other things that I describe as well got their putting the industry lobbyists in charge of departments that oversee those industries. I mean, the Department of the Interior, think about under President Reagan when it was run by James Watt, or the EPA under President Reagan, or when they were doing the reductions in force in Washington back in the 80s and just cutting across the board. And by the way, and I respect people that are worried by the deficit in Washington, and they say that deficits aren't conservative. It's not, that's our doctrine has been from time immemorial has been about balanced budgets and responsible spending. And I am forthrightly a liberal. I believe in Keynesianism. I believe in the New Deal, and I think that deficit spending is legitimate and has a place. However, what happens when conservatives, meaning mainly Reagan but also Bush, get in charge is they run up these massive deficits. And they do it again and again and again until you come to the point that you can say, yes, there's many good conservatives out there who know how dangerous and foolish this is when you run up deficits that are
as large
as they were in World War II.
Mr. Frank, where is the budget written?
I'm sorry, where is it written?
Yeah, the one that's passed.
You mean by Congress?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. But
don't tell me the big government conservatives that overspend. It's the Congress that overspends. It was the Republican Congress that became big monster spenders that deserved to lose. Now the Democrats, before and after, are big spenders. We have yet to see a conservative Congress.
But Bush signed those bills.
That's right. And
yes,
the original,
oh, and Bush is a big spender.
Bush
is a big spender. Bush is a big spender.
Carol Felsenthal's got a comment.
There's some bipartisan nature of this, of course. You know, you have Ted Stevens as one of the king of earmarks.
Yeah,
you also
Republican.
Have Robert Byrd, the Democrat of West Virginia, who's probably the king of all king of spenders. And as somebody born and reared Chicagoan as I am, I watched Barack Obama not endorse a true reformer in Forrest Claypool, who then went on to lose for the Cook County Board. He's very close to the Daleys, both Bill Daley, who was Commerce Secretary in the Clinton administration, who was one of the big backers and known as the NAFTA czar, Emil Jones, who was a double-dipping president of the Illinois State Senate, is Barack Obama's mentor. I mean, he is, in that way, a traditional politician. Do I fault him for that? I think he couldn't be where he is if he didn't have...
But wait a
if
minute.
He hadn't made those.
Oh, no.
This idea that Barack Obama is not a reformer. Look, I'm a state lobbyist. Were I somebody who lobbied the federal government, I wouldn't be allowed to send in my $25 checks to the Obama campaign, and I wouldn't be able to send in my $25 checks to the Democratic National Committee because they say federal special interests are running the system, and we're going to break that by not taking money from those special interests. The Republicans have not made that policy position this time right now. So when you ask, what has Barack done, he's breaking that link in a way that McCain is not.
We got to stop. Thomas Franks is the author of the book, The Wrecking Crew, How Conservatives Rule. I'm looking at your list here tomorrow. Tom, you're going to be at 6 o'clock tomorrow. For those in the Chicagoland area, you're going to be at Seminary Coop, Seminary Co-op at the International House. That's on 59th Street. Again, Thomas Frank is the author of the book, The Wrecking Crew. You'll see him live in Chicago tomorrow, and he's been live on Beyond the Beltway tonight. Tom, thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, thanks, Bruce. It was
back
a lot of
with
fun.
More calls in a moment.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
From Bozeman, Montana to Wilmington, Delaware, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Michael is listening to us on WLS, our flagship in Chicago. Go ahead, Michael. Hello.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, if Barack Obama was not a black man, this would be a runaway election.
For who?
The reality is, I don't know, people don't want to talk about that issue.
For who? Runaway election for who?
For Barack. That's clearly what he meant.
I'm sorry?
You're saying it would be a runaway election for Barack Obama if he was not black?
Absolutely.
I think you're nuts.
I think it's conventional wisdom that what the caller is suggesting is that there are some people out there that just won't vote for a black man.
You know what I think? I think Barack Obama's skin color is to his tremendous advantage in this election, and I'll tell you why. There is a tremendous wellspring within the white community that wants to see a minority candidate elected president. I want to see that. And the reason is, we want, conservatives particularly, and I think Republicans in general, want to see a unified, solid United States of America. And we know that if a black man is elected president, it will be a tremendous event that brings this country to a new level of putting the past behind us. And we think that is good. And this man, you may have a
Let's let him finish his point.
I think you're wrong, Michael.
Go ahead, Michael. Finish your point.
I disagree with you.
Okay.
Bottom line is, not just any black man. This is a man who's infinitely qualified. Other thing is,
really, what's he done?
Let him finish.
I think to talk about qualifications with a moron like Bush in office is ridiculous.
But again, Bush is not running again.
I'm sorry?
Bush is not running again. So make your case.
Well, that makes all of us fortunate.
Michael, name me something Barack Obama's done.
Well, Barack Obama, being from Chicago and being aware of his history.
But what did he do?
I've got to let him finish.
Working in the community in All Gale Gardens, which I'm intimately familiar with, to help the people out there.
Name me something he accomplished.
He helped a number of people in Argyle Gardens. Unless you understand what was happening out there, you wouldn't appreciate it.
I do understand what was happening. What did he do?
That in and of itself is one thing, but Barack Obama is promoting that America that you just said we all want. That is what he's promoting.
I don't believe he is.
And he hasn't. Well then you're...
Michael, do you believe that in his public life that John McCain has supported that type of an America as well?
You know what? And I'm glad you mentioned John McCain, because I've always thought John McCain was a quality guy.
Yeah.
I just don't happen to think that he's the one. I don't want anyone who supports more years of this war with favorite citizens. First of all, we've been talking about the war now. We forget that this is a war we shouldn't be in the first place. And anyone who supports that and this nonsense, this John Wayne image of we got to win, do what's right.
Do what's right is winning.
Well in his view, thanks very much for calling. Nick, and then back to calls.
I guess I'd say, you know, in response to Michael's call, at the end of the day, if there's going to be a defining issue that governs whether or not Barack Obama is elected president of the United States, it's going to be the fundamental question about readiness to be president. I agree with Dan. I think that, you know, there's a possibility that race is going to come into this. I think it's going to be after the curtains closed in the ballot box. I don't think it's anything anybody's going to talk about in a polling sample. But I think we need to keep coming back to the fundamental issue. I think this is true of the Palin candidacy as well. Let's talk about the merits of the candidate, and I think that's where the debate ought to be.
But I also believe, and I think I alluded to this a couple of weeks ago, and I think at this moment the issue of race has been discussed earlier in the campaign. It's primarily been related to the Jeremiah Wright contributions to this campaign. I think at this moment in time, the campaign is being waged on both sides, where race it's being properly discussed. It's not being overly discussed. It is not revving up some of these feelings in certain sectors of the country that would make it very difficult for whoever is elected to govern.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to be very important in the 51 days that are left that the tone of the campaign stay about where it is right now, mm-hmm. because the last thing we would want is for this election to be perceived to hinge on the issue of race, because right. whoever wins that, if they're tagged with that image, they will have a very difficult time governing the country, and we as a country will have a very difficult time moving on from what is right now, I think, one of the better outcomes of two primary seasons that we've had in a long time.
But although what Nick said about it happening behind the curtain is correct, and you have this what's called the Bradley factor after the race in California.
We can't fight that, but I think that
the conversation is elevated above that now. Where it's not elevated above that is on the vice presidential level, and that's with Sarah Palin. And I'd really like to see some dialing down of the heat on that subject. I've also been noticing stories in the newspapers by African Americans are interviewed, and they're saying that if Obama loses a race that was his to win, we want a third party because we will be so disillusioned and discouraged.
Well, I do believe that regardless of who wins this election, there's going to be a discussion of third party movements and fourth party movements in this country, regardless of what happens, based on what happened in the primaries. On that note, we want to say a farewell to our guest. Our Republican has been Lee Newcomb. Our Democrat has been Dan Johnson Weinberger. Carol Felsenthal, author of the book Clinton and Exiles, joined us, as well as policy advisor Nick Ditson, making his first appearance. Nick, thanks very much. Good job tonight.
Thanks, Bruce.
This program is a Jenny B production, produced in association with WLS Talk Radio. And our thanks to Tom Veracruz and Patrick Johnson for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week at this same time, when we'll have another 2 hours of Rock'em Sock'em discussion of American politics on America's great radio stations and Sirius XM satellite radio. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to SCORE.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit SCORE.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go Red!
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
My name is Teresa. I was a good mother. Then I tried meth and quickly became addicted. I abandoned my little girl to chase my next high. 8 months later, my daughter begged me to come home. Her plea made me enter drug treatment. My recovery wasn't easy, but I've been clean for 4 years now.
Meth is a powerful drug that affects everyone. If you know someone who's using, get involved. Treatment is available and it works. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.